Great efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rothen Friends.
Hello, this is Mike Rothen. Joining me today is Joel Morrow of Ploger Transportation. Hello, Joel. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing really good. Starting to feel like I'm getting out a little bit after being in inside for so much. How's the whole virus been for you? Because you both drive and help run the technology there at Ploger. Tell us a little bit about operating over the last few months.
Yeah, actually, for us, we've been busy. We haul a lot of food-grade stuff, so it's considered essential product, and we've been busy right through the whole shutdown.
Has it been for you? I mean, you've been worried or scared about any of the places you go, or have any of them put in place processes that have caused you anything?
They've all put in place process. You get little questionnaires asking if you've been to certain areas. They want you to wear the face mask, all the typical stuff. But I really haven't had any concern of any place we've gone. It's been pretty smooth, actually. A lot of people were complaining Pennsylvania early on. It shut down some rest areas and whatnot. We just started packing our own food, and it wasn't a problem.
Yeah, we all got used to changes. Everyone's been affected. So let's just start this off by tell us a little bit about Ploger and the history and a little bit about your role there. And we'll get into a few more details here in a little bit.
Well, Ploger Transportation, we run general van freight, a lot of food grade stuff. You know, we have some basic what I call our blue chip customers, where we're hauling outbound from direct customers. And then we do some brokered loads coming back into the area. As such, we see a variety of different, products and different weights and whatnot in the trailers, which can make things challenging sometimes for freight efficiency, a lot of variation. We have recently expanded our reach. We're operating in all 48 states now, which is relatively new for us. I know we're having a good time with it. A lot of challenges, getting out west. Our guys normally haven't run out west traditionally, I guess, and so learning some new things and just having a good time with it, really.
Very cool. One of the questions I wanted to ask you later, but I'm going to dive into it right now, and that's around focused specifications for the work that the truck and trailer are doing. Oftentimes here at NACFI, we find that carriers, they sort of design an average truck because sometimes they're going to haul light, sometimes they're going to haul heavy, sometimes they're going to have to go faster or slower, and they just then end up compromising to a, kind of an average spec, which really shortcuts their ability to get high fuel economy. So, you mentioned that's kind of an emerging challenge maybe, or a new one for you as you've expanded your presence. But, how do you look at that? Because can't you really leave a lot on the table if you do that?
Well, this is interesting because this is something that we have dealt with for years, actually, even as a regional carrier, because you never really knew what the economy was going to do. I mean, you didn't know where freight rates were going. You didn't know what fuel prices were doing. So you tried to put this generic spec out there that, well, if fuel prices go, to the moon, this truck will do okay. It's not the best truck, but if it's cheap, it can run faster. You're looking at all these different scenarios that are going through your head. And the challenge is to build the ultimately, I guess, adaptable truck would be the best terminology I guess I can come up with. And we went down the road where we had a couple of different specs for kind of our local regional work and then our over-the-road work. And it's very costly to maintain two different specs, different engines and transmissions or rear-end ratios and whatnot. It creates some problems with drivers. One driver wants to drive this kind of truck, one driver wants the other type, and vice versa, and so that creates some challenges. So what we have done is we've really taken on this extreme downspeeding and of the powertrain, and we've done it to such a degree that we have a lot of overlap in the gears of the truck, especially at the higher gears, the overdrive, the direct drive, and the first underdrive. And we're having a whole lot of success of being able to use that truck because we can run at highway speed in two different gears, adapting that truck to either do local P&D or high-speed runs out west. And, in fact, I'm doing that right now with a truck that I'm running that's got it's a 231 gear ratio with an overdrive transmission. And it has a whole lot of overlap between the gears, and it's done just phenomenal at high speed out west. We've got a dedicated Utah turn that we do, and we run relatively heavy out there, 70,000 pound gross combination vehicle weights, and you know, pushing 80 mile an hour, the truck was turning eight and a half miles a gallon with no trailer aero on it.
Wow.
Then we turn around, brought that truck right back into a local P&D cycle, and this is what shocked me. I've been running it for 30 days now. Lots of heavy loads being delivered to customers. Guys will bring them back to the yard and drop them. I'll run them out to the customers, deliver them. Truck's doing 9.7 miles a gallon in a true P&D duty cycle. Absolutely shocked me.
So you have to drive it differently, or can you set that up to be done electronically?
That's what we're in the process of doing right now, is developing that logic so the driver doesn't have to think about it. I'm working a little bit with the OEMs on this type of logic, so it knows if it's in a P&D duty cycle, or if it knows if it's out running over the road at a certain speed with a certain weight. Some of the new engines, they have they're not a set torque rating. It's a dynamic torque rating. So you could never say the engine is 455 horsepower and 1,850 pound-feet of torque. This engine will vary that torque based on what's needed. At times I do need 1,850. At times I only need 1,450. And it knows what torque rating, what mode to put that engine in.
So it can kind of learn and know. But also, if you could tell it ahead of time, either through over-the-air programming or just simply by telling it, kind of the old performance versus, fuel economy mode. Maybe you've got a P&D 1 and 2 mode, a long-haul West Coast 3 and 4 mode, something.
Sure,
and,
right.
You actually plug in that morning a number, and the truck knows that it ought to operate this way and that way. Is that an option here?
Well, that's what we're exploring right now. What is the best way to do this where it's not confusing to the driver, where it's very simple to use? But you're exactly right. The key is, when you're setting up the powertrain, to have enough gear overlap to make these buttons actually useful, that we're talking about, okay, I'm going to be in P&D mode. If I have a traditionally geared truck, hitting a button that says P&D mode doesn't do me a whole lot of good, because the gearing is not there. The adaptability is not there for the truck to run in the optimal range it needs to run in. The way we gear trucks right now, we're thinking, okay, well, this truck's going to run 70 miles an hour, so I'm going to do a direct drive with a 2:1:6 ratio, and this is what it's going to be. Well, that truck doesn't really perform all that well running around town.
Yeah.
So there's no overlap in that gearing, and that's where we're really focusing hard on how to exploit that advantage of that the super downsped concept. Allows a whole lot of overlap at cruising speeds. So it's just worked tremendously well for us initially here, and we're expecting that's going to get a whole lot better as we develop and we figure out the process in which we tell the truck, okay, here's what your duty cycle is.
Yeah. I think in the trucking industry, we far too many times think that the truck does the same duty cycle every day. And, the industry has a long history of trucks going into long haul early in their life and then coming into a regional and ending up, in urban and ultimately maybe in ag or at the ports. What we keep finding at NACFI, and maybe it's always been the case, or maybe it's happening a little more often, is You know, a truck will go out and do a long run during the day, and at night it'll stay in the city and do a second one. And, you know, the slip seating, or, you know, other people call it dual utilization, that's becoming, you know, it growing, or at least something that the fleets want to do, but they're oftentimes, you know, can't do it because the truck's designed for one of the other uses, and it either affects the resale value horribly, or they just can't use it, you know, very well.
I agree, and this is one of the subjects that I think, when we look at the automated manual transmissions, where a lot of people didn't take this into account. And just a while back, I said, I want a transmission with a crawler gear. And everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy. You're in an over-the-road operation. What do you need a crawler gear for? And that P&D cycle, that low starting gear, when you're coming away from stoplights all the time, when you're backing underneath trailers all the time, you know, you're dropping and hooking maybe 8, 9, 10 times a day, that crawler gear takes a whole lot of stress and strain off that automated manual transmission, off the clutch, off the driveline. And it has become a just ultimately useful tool to take a highway truck that may have this super fast gearing, so you can run 75, 80 mile an hour, and be able to bring that truck back in and then use it in P&D and not tear the transmission and the clutch up.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a growth in P&D. I think we're going to see a growth in drop and hook. I think you know, warehouses getting closer together. I think you know, we've even called it a little bit of truck to truck intermodal, where you know, you use a different truck for the long haul, different truck for the more urban kind of piece. So, but let's take a step back real quick. Joel, how'd you become so, you know, fanatical in a very positive sense around around saving fuel? And then tell us a little bit about the dual role you have, which, you know, is really unique of being sort of the technology leader for the fleet as well as continuing to drive.
Well, I'll tell you, early on in my trucking career, it became painfully obvious that if you don't do something different, you're not going to excel. You're not going to get where you want to be. You're not going to achieve your goals. And it almost early on came to the point where we'd look at what everybody else was doing and do just the exact opposite. It seemed to produce better results for us. You know, there was a time when everybody was okay, big bore engines, high horsepower, you know, back in the early 90s, and you know, we would go to the 11 liter and moderate horsepower and done some things that way and had a lot of success with it. So I think what really brought me into it was we had certain goals that we wanted to meet, and we just knew we weren't going to get there if we were doing the exact same thing that everybody else was doing. And so we just kind of decided, look, we've got a small trucking company here. I'm involved with my brother and sister-in-law, and we all just kind of picked a piece of the puzzle. And I've always been a driver. I've always loved, you know, putting together trucks, specking trucks, doing that type of thing. So I took that piece of the puzzle and ran with it. And we learned early on, it really gave us a competitive advantage over everybody else. And so a really hardcore focus, just so we could succeed and you know, leverage that advantage that an efficient operation gives you.
Yeah, and you're pretty open with sharing your successes and your challenges and being careful not to push what's worked for you on to everybody else. So I see you pretty active in social media, you know, sharing different results and things. And you're on XM Radio with our friend Kevin Rutherford every other week or so on Road Dog. I mean, why be so open? It takes a lot of your time and energy, but is it giving back? Is it helping others?
It does. I mean, I do like to give back when I can. I love to help people, you know, sidestep some of the pitfalls that we were drug into early on in our careers. I mean, I wish I would have had somebody that I could have turned to and said, you know, what's the best way to do this, or give me some options to think about. And I think that's what I try to do, is give people options to think about. I don't necessarily want to jam anything down their throat, but, yep. You know, look, here's something that we do that works. here is all the relevant data that I can share. Look at it and see what you think. You know, if you're open-minded, look at this and you know, maybe you don't agree with the whole concept, but you take a piece here and a piece there from it and you put it together and you use it in your operation. You know, I think that's a great thing. Everybody's operation is different.
I'd like to dig into one in particular. So a week or so ago, you posted where you ran pretty much the same route with very same load or similar load at really different vehicle speeds. And I think you saved like 17 minutes throughout the day. But, you know, NACFI, as we study and we do our annual fleet fuel study and other pieces, and, you know, we believe truck speed is up. Speed limits are up. Truck drivers, you know, freight's been busy over the last few years. Speed's up, and we think we're burning more fuel because of that, even though there's other things that have been going on to burn less fuel. But you remember that? Walk us through what you did. What was the difference in mileage? What was the time difference, the average speed? Take a few minutes and walk us through that.
Sure. What I'd done is I'd left the yard with a load of paper, rolls of paper. And it went from Norwalk, Ohio to Mason, Michigan. I want to say it was right at 200 miles or right around there, the run-up. And I got into the yard that morning, and there was a little snafu on the trailer number, and I'm driving around the yard. You know, I've got my clock started. I'm burning up time. I have an appointment time to make, and I can't find this damn trailer. And it's pretty early, and I don't want to wake anybody up. Finally, I got to make the phone call to get me to the right trailer number, and now I've got to move it. So I get up on Ohio Turnpike and, you know, run her up to about 73 mile an hour, lock the cruise in. Of course, there's construction zones that you have to slow down to go through. Mm-hmm. It just resulted in what I consider a mediocre fuel economy. We were looking at about 8.5 on the run up for 80,000 pounds. And at higher speed, once I got into Michigan, 65 mile an hour state, I set the cruise at 66, and we got up there at 8.5. I got unloaded. Now, I did come back empty off this load, but I was under no time constraint. So I just ran back at 55 mile an hour. And again, this is a 53-foot dry van with no aerodynamics on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 20 minutes longer, I believe, it was like 17 to 20 minutes longer to get back, but I was at 13 miles a gallon on the trip back. You know, and you'd probably expect maybe a 9 mile a gallon coming back if you were running that at 70 to 73 mile an hour coming back. But there was no reason for me to run that fast. And our local guys, they get paid by the hour, so that's even more incentive, I guess, to kind of slow down. So the point is, managing your time pays big, big dividends, and it's not just fuel economy. It's in maintenance for the owner-operators that may be listening to this. You know, your emission system, we've kind of learned over the years that the lower the average RPM of that truck over its lifetime, the less emission systems issues you have. And people normally don't connect those dots. So there's a whole lot of reasons for managing your time so you can manage your speed to increase your overall efficiency of your operation. And a lot of times the productivity loss is very, very minimal, especially when you weigh that against brakes and tires and driveline cost and emission systems cost.
So many times you make the mistake of saying, okay, 70 versus 60, you know, at 10 mile per hour. So in an hour, I'm going to get another 60 miles. Well, it just doesn't happen.
Almost never happens. And I'll tell you, I've studied this in depth. And as you run closer to 55 and 60, your average speed is very close to your target. I mean, when I run 55, I'll average 52, 53, sometimes 54 mile an hour. When I run 75, I average 60 mile an hour. So think about that, because you're always running up on people, and it's the brake application per mile goes through the roof. So it's hard on brakes, it's hard on tires, and you really are not saving that much time. Not nearly as much as when you just do the simple calculation and say, oh, I'm going to run 75, you know.
Right, and then the final thing I would say about speed, I mean, a lot of people know that my wife and I travel a lot in a big fifth wheel camper, and you know, it took me a while to get comfortable driving slower, but as soon as I did, Joel, I was able to go easily another 100, 150 miles a day. So, you know, what used to be, I was just stressed out at, you know, you're going to laugh at, but what is, you know, 300-400 miles. I was now able to go 400-500 miles pretty easily, because you just don't have the stress when you're over in that right-hand lane.
Well, this is true. But take it a step beyond that. I mean, in trucking, I think your life expectancy is like, for truck drivers, 58 years old or something like that. I mean, it's ridiculously low. And this stress day after day that you're talking about at high speed, in my opinion, it takes a hell of a toll on the driver over years. And this is something that I kind of wanted to get together with Kevin Rutherford on, to kind of really look into this. You know, he's into all this health stuff. Let's look at the impact that speed has on the driver's health. I think it's much greater than what most people would even begin to comprehend.
Yeah, I think it's equally the health of the driver and the health of the truck. You brought it up earlier when it comes to, you know, the amount of brake applications that you have to do at 70 versus 55, versus 60, the amount of, you know, the speed that the engine's going, and the wear items that become less. And maybe that's the thing we'll do next time we get together, Joel, is work on, you know, the benefits to the driver, the benefits to the equipment. You know, it doesn't take too many cents per mile in maintenance improvements to make a huge difference for the profitability of a fleet.
Well, with today's emissions engines, we all know, and the owner-operators especially are well attuned to this, one trip to the dealership can easily cost you $15,000. And, you know, as we make this connection with average RPM and emission system failures, it doesn't take too many $15,000 failures to really start to impact the bottom line, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think speed management today is even more important than it was maybe 15 years ago, before we had all the emission stuff on. You know, fuel prices on average are probably a little bit higher than they were back in the day. So there's a whole lot of reasons to manage speed. Not to mention the fact that put your wife and kids in a car, and the truck's going to hit them. Do you want that truck going 55, or do you want that truck going 70 when it hits that car? I can tell you right now, you know, it's going to be a 55-mile-an-hour truck. Nobody's going to say, yeah, let's do it at 70. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's safety here. There's all kinds of things going on here. And, you know, all the safety metrics that you look at, they're the same things that you look at for fuel efficiency, how you're accelerating, how you're slowing down, you know, what your cruise speed, brake applications per mile, all those things that apply to safety, they apply to fuel efficiency.
Sure. Yeah. So as we get about ready to wrap this up, Joel, what do you see in the future? I mean, what are you most excited about? A lot of talk about transformational technologies in trucking, you know, electric and continued automation and those sort of things. And I know you got to balance the big things with the little continuous improvement items, but I don't know. Look out 3 or 4 years for you. What do you see kind of as a big
thing? I think the big thing in the trucks that run some distance, the downspeeding, I think we're going to get really downsped. We are just seeing some phenomenal fuel economy numbers on these super downsped setups that we're running with the turbo compounder. You know, that's unloading the engine. It's taking load off the internals.
Yep.
It's driving the horsepower peak lower in the RPM range. Of course, peak torque comes on very low, and because we have 360 degrees of application at the flywheel, there's no firing order induced harmonics there. When they're geared right, and this has been the struggle to get people engaged on how to gear these things, but when they are geared right, they are absolutely phenomenal. And the electric truck people for the long distance thing, they're really going to have to get their stuff together to be able to compete with a super downspeed engine. The local stuff, I think electric is going to be where it's at. That's going to be kind of fun to start playing with that. So that's the two things that I'm looking at. For some of the local stuff, we're looking at some electric and, you know, some solar stuff at the yard and charging and that type of stuff. I think that's going to be kind of fun to play with. The super downsped powertrains for the over-the-road trucks that are going to run some high speed.
Well, hey, my friend, thank you very much. I also want to recognize Bloger as being participants in both of our NACFES Run on Less programs. We are already starting to scope what we might do in 2021. I mean, you can't sit on your laurels, but you're doing great work there, Joel, and congratulations to everybody, and keep at it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Freight Efficiency with NACFES Mike Rosenfriends.